Have you ever been told something that later turns out not to be true? Here are 7 things commonly taught in Chinese class that are actually wrong. Hello and welcome to the Hacking Chinese podcast. In this week's episode, I'm going to talk about things that are usually taught in Chinese classrooms and Chinese textbooks, but that are actually wrong. And to be clear here, I mean things that aren't just well-meant simplifications, because of course we cannot teach everything at once, and advanced or very complex explanations of certain things don't belong in beginner classrooms. So the things I do want to talk about are then things that we should either just leave out, they shouldn't be taught at all because they're just wrong, or there is a readily available correct version that is at least as simple as the one that's being taught, so we should obviously just use the better version. So without further ado, let's get into the list. So number 1 is 几 can only be used to represent numbers between 0 and 10. And this is something I've seen many times in textbooks, and I've heard it from a couple of teachers as well. For example, you will hear someone saying that 你几岁 can only be used to ask for someone's age if you expect the answer to be between 0 and 10. Or maybe you want to ask how many people there are somewhere, and you then have to use 几个人 if you think that the number is below 10, but 多少 if the number is more than 10. This is wrong, and I should clarify that when I say wrong here, I mean that it does not describe how most people use the Chinese language. So it's actually very common to use 几, even when you expect an answer that is much bigger than 10. For example, you can certainly ask someone who is maybe 15, 你几岁? That works perfectly fine. I've had people ask me 你几岁 many, many times, and I started learning Chinese when I was 24. It's also okay to ask 几个人 even if you expect the answer to be 25. That is not a problem either. It is true that 几 is often used when something is easily countable though, so you shouldn't use it for very big numbers. That would be a bit inappropriate. But it's simply not true that there is a sharp cutoff at exactly 10, and I do not know where this notion comes from. Maybe it is because 几 is supposed to stand in for any Chinese character, so maybe, after 10 you need more than one character to write the numbers, or something like that, I really don't know. But anyway, don't be afraid of using 几, even if the number is larger than 10. So, on to number 2. 你好 is an informal greeting, and 您好 is the formal version. So this is something that we see in many textbooks. You have 你好, and it says something like hello. And you'd think that would be then an informal greeting. And then it says 您好, and it says formal or polite, and then hello. So many students think that 您好 is an informal greeting, and that is not right. So what is correct here is that 您好 is more formal than 你好, but what many textbooks and teachers miss is that 您好 is also a formal greeting. It is typically not used with people you know well. Friends do not greet each other with 你好, and you don't say 你好 to your family or relatives. You do use 你好 to people you don't know, maybe on the phone or to strangers or in situations where you want to be slightly more polite. So 你好 is also a formal greeting. If you do want to be informal, then you can use English greetings. That's very common to say hey or hi or hello or something like that. The traditional way of greeting people is to ask a question that is related to the context in which you meet them. And the most common one is 你吃了吗? As in, have you eaten? And obviously that only works if it's realistic that they might recently have had something to eat. Or you might say 你下班了吗? Or something like that. You can also say 最近怎么样? So this is similar to English. You can imagine a beginner textbook in English where it says hello. And very few native speakers of English say hello when they meet a friend. I think I've almost never heard that, actually. We say something else. There are many ways of greeting people, obviously, but hello is actually not that common. So over to number 3, and that is 中文 can only be used to refer to written Chinese. And this probably comes from the fact that 文 normally means written language or culture, So when you have the various languages with 文 at the end, we can do that with other languages. So we have 日文 or 英文 for Japanese or English, for example. Some people believe that this can only be used for the written language. They kind of feel that it ought to be like that. And if you want to refer to the spoken language, you need to use another word. So maybe 英语 in the case of English or 日语 in the case of Japanese. Now, this is not how it works in practice, so this is wrong. You can definitely use 中文 to mean speak or to refer to the spoken language. So, for example, the question 你会说中文吗? Is very common, as in can you speak Chinese? And this is also used in written Chinese. For example, 说中文 has 4 million hits on Google. So it's certainly not true that it is only restricted to the written language. Maybe some people feel that it ought to be like that, but that is not the way it is used. So go ahead, use 中文 both for spoken and written Chinese, that's fine. So number 4, 了 indicates past tense, and this is wrong. It is true that many sentences that have 了 in them can be translated to English in past tense, but that does not mean that 了 is a past tense marker. This will be something that is hard to learn simply by reading or listening, because many, many students draw the conclusion that 了 means past tense, even if the teachers or textbooks don't say this. And it is not. And the difference here is kind of important. Past tense is obviously a tense, and that refers to when something happens in time. So a past tense is obviously about something that happened in the past. But 了 is not that, and Chinese is usually analyzed as having no tense at all, and instead we have something called aspect. And aspect is not about when something happened, but the state of the action itself. So in the case of 了, for example, it can be used in many ways, but two of the most common ones are change of state, and that can be in the past, present, or future. It's unrelated to tense. And the other one is completion, which often happens in the past, but that doesn't mean that 了 itself is a past tense marker. And this is a problem both when you read and listen to Chinese, because you will see 了 all over the place where it cannot possibly refer to the past tense. And when you speak and write Chinese yourself, you will use it a lot more than you should, and probably in the wrong kind of sentences. So by knowing that it is not about tense, and just knowing that simple fact, you don't even need to study 了 itself, at least you will have a better chance of learning from the Chinese that you listen and read. Moving on to number 5, the third tone is often pronounced as a falling rising tone. And this is something that we covered in the previous episode of the podcast, so I'm not going to go into too much detail here. Check episode 26 if you want to know more about this. So in essence, the third tone is a falling rising tone when it is pronounced in isolation, such as when saying a single word with a single syllable, such as 五, the number 5. Then you go down and you go up. But the fact is that you don't actually do this very often in connected speech. It's actually very rare. You do it sometimes when you stress something very much, or maybe at the end of a statement sometimes. But generally speaking, people don't go around saying single syllables, and that's why the falling rising tone is rare. So this is not really something that teachers teach incorrectly, in the sense that it is true that the third tone is pronounced like this, but then a lot of emphasis is put on this single tone, leading to lots of issues with how people pronounce it. In a large majority of cases, of course, in connected speech, the third tone is just a tone that starts low and goes lower. Usually we just call it a low tone, or it rises as it does in front of another third tone. And actually many textbooks do mention this, it's just that most students don't notice, or the falling rising variety of the third tone takes so much focus that no one really notices the other things that actually are much more important. But like I said, please listen to episode 26 if you want to learn more about this. Number 6, Chinese characters are composed of radicals. So many students are taught that radicals are the building blocks of Chinese characters, and that you can break down a character into its radicals, and that by learning radicals you can then understand and learn characters more effectively. So this is wrong, and I'll do my best to explain why, but it is a little bit complicated. The word radical, 部首, in Chinese means section head, so it literally refers to a section in a dictionary and the kind of category in which characters are placed. So if we take a character like yang, and that would be yangzi or 怎么样的样, it's composed of two components. We have mu, tree, and then we have yang, which means sheep. So in this character then, mu is the radical. And that means that if you want to look this character up in a traditional dictionary, one that is not arranged by pronunciation, you need to go to the place where all the characters that have this radical, mu, where they are listed, and then you go by stroke count and you try to find yang. So that's the function of a radical. It is used to look characters up in a dictionary. And that means that in a character, only one component is the radical. So for example, it is mu, the tree component in yang, that is the radical, not yang, sheep. But if you go and look up a list of all the radicals, you can find yang in that one. So isn't that also a radical? Yes, it is, but not in that character. So a list of radicals is basically just a list of character components or characters that can be radicals in certain characters. And remember, the only purpose of this is to look them up in dictionaries. It has nothing to do with the functions they play linguistically or why they are in these characters. This is a later invention that came about much later than the characters were created. So what are the building blocks of Chinese characters then if they are not radicals? Well, they are functional components, or you can just say components, that works fine. And when I say functional components, I mean that each component was originally included in the character for a reason and it had a certain function. Now, sometimes these things have changed a lot over time and they might not be very obvious today. But for example, in this character, yang, the same one. So mu here, the tree, that is related to the meaning because yang, the whole character, used to indicate a fruit that grows on trees. So that is related to the meaning, so its function is semantic, it gives the meaning here. And the other one, yang, the sheep, it has nothing to do with the meaning of the character, but instead you might have noticed that yang, sheep, is pronounced the same as yang, just with a different tone. So yang here is a sound component, so it's included in this character because of its pronunciation. So we can say that its function is to give sound in this character. And if this is the first you hear about this, I think you should check out two articles on Hacking Chinese. One of them is Phonetic Components, Part 1, the key to 80% of all characters. And it's called that because most characters actually have sound components like these. You should also check out the guest article by John Renfro from Outlier Linguistics called Why You Should Think of Characters in Terms of Functional Components. So the upshot of all this is that if you focus on learning the most common radicals, which is a good idea, but it is not a good idea because they are radicals, it's a good idea because those characters also happen to be common semantic components. And there are many components that are not radicals, like they don't appear in a list of radicals, but they're also important to learn. So focusing on radicals is not really the point. And you don't have to learn what the radical is in all the characters that you learn. That is not useful unless you plan to use a traditional paper dictionary a lot. And, well, most people don't. And finally, we reach number 7, the last one. 小姐 is a suitable form of address for young women. This is not entirely wrong. It depends on where you are. So, for example, in Taiwan, using 小姐 to address women is fine. However, in mainland China, and specifically in northern China, 小姐 has the added meaning of prostitute, at least as a slang word, and that means that if you address people directly like that, it can be a bit awkward. However, as a foreigner, I think most people will not care that much if you use this word inappropriately. Now, I should also say that if you use a surname with the 小姐, it always works. So you can definitely say 王小姐, that is never a problem. It's only the 小姐 on its own that can be a bit problematic. If you want to use something else, I suggest that you use 女士, that's a bit more formal and polite form of address for women, and you can also use 美女. So those were 7 things that are commonly taught in Chinese class, but that are actually wrong. And I've heard about these many times. Many of them I've also seen myself in textbooks that I've used, or I've had teachers who tell them to me. And obviously, this is not just based on my personal experience. I've talked with a large number of students, studied textbooks and listened to teachers and so on. However, I have probably missed some, so I would be very interested in hearing about your story. What have you been taught that you later figured out wasn't actually the case? Please leave a comment to the written article on Hacking Chinese. There is a link in the description. Or you can reach out to me through social media or email or however you want. I'm always looking for new things to add to this list, so I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Thank you for tuning in to the Hacking Chinese podcast. If you like this episode, please share it. More information and inspiration about learning and teaching Chinese can be found at hackingchinese.com. See you in the next episode, and until then, good luck with your studies.